Good morning. It's 11 minutes before the hour. You're listening to NPR's Morning Edition over Raven Radio, KCAW in Sitka, where it's 38 degrees and light rain has been falling this morning along with some gusty east winds. Today is Monday, April 2nd, 2012. I'm Robert Woolsey with Raven News. The first opening of the 2012 Sitka Sacro herring fishery brought in about 4,700 tons of the small silverfish. That's the preliminary harvest estimate, according to the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. The opening happened at 2:30 p.m. on Saturday and closed about 3.5 hours later in the northwest portion of Sitka Sound and included Hayward Strait, Premisla Bay, and parts of Eastern Bay. The fish harvested Saturday make up about 16% of the total harvest. This year's guideline harvest level, or GHL, is 29,000 tons. ADF&G also says about 1.4 nautical miles of active spawn was recorded near Middle and Crow Islands. No fishery took place on Sunday. KCAW will update on air and online as new openings are called. About 300 people attended a four-day clan conference that wrapped up yesterday in Sitka. The theme was sharing our knowledge for those who come after us. KNBA's Jocelyn Estes attended the conference from Anchorage and filed this report.
Participants came to Sitka from Canada and from Lower 48 and Alaskan communities. They included anthropologists, historians, curators, linguists, and scientists, as well as elders such as keynote speaker Cyril George. The 89-year-old leader of the Deshiton, or Beaver Clan, is originally from Angoon. He says he told conference director Jerry Hope that Tlingit elders need to help future generations just as their ancestors helped them. George told a story from ancient times of a man hiding in safety as a raiding party pushed off from the beach in a canoe carrying people captured to be slaves.
He heard a child cry. He recognized it as his child. He was already safe in our woods. He came out of the woods to be taken slave for the love of his child. I told Jerry, if that's not gonna keep you going, what is?
The conference included several sessions on the history of the Alaska Native Brotherhood, which celebrates its 100-year anniversary this year, as well as topics such as the Tlingit language, art history, and management of subsistence fisheries. In one room, technicians used laser technology to document ancient carved hats, sacred objects called at-u, information that can be used with a computer-guided router to make copies of the hats. Tiny Burrell says discussions about at-u were a highlight of the conference for him.
If I just learn one thing in the whole time, then go back to Seattle, it'd be worth the trip.
And what have you gotten out of the conference?
Watching the clan leaders work amongst themselves and how our At'u is taken care of and a better explanation of what it means to our people. That's one of the most important things I got out of the.
Here are voices of other conference participants.
I'm Donna Rohr, and I'm with the University of Alaska.
And what are you getting out of the conference?
I really love museums, and this is like living in a live museum. I have to say the last session, it was an extremely moving experience, and I had tears in my eyes when he was done speaking about his life and his family and his beliefs.
My name is Grace Katas Larson, and I stay here in Sitka. I'm happy to see that we still carry the knowledge of our culture. We still carry the knowledge of our language. And I've noticed the elders have shared the stories.
I'm Josh, and I'm from Arizona. Like, I was born in Arizona.
And where do you live now?
I live in Juneau.
What's your last name?
Deasis.
And how old are you?
I'm 11.
What are you getting out of the conference?
That people train for strength, and everyone holds each other up by their bonds with one another.
Evenings were filled with open discussions, dance performances, and a banquet. The conference was hosted by the Tlingit Readers, a volunteer nonprofit organization that has hosted several Klan conferences over the years in various Southeast Alaska communities. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Jacqueline Estes.
Federal officials say they are trying to clarify rules for Alaska Natives' use of sea otters. A draft set of guidelines from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is aimed at addressing some of the confusion over what's allowed. It's been a frustrating situation for native hunters and artisans who say the government has discouraged them from using the animals. Matt Lichtenstein reports.
Ketchikan Indian Community Tribal Council member Andre LeCornu gave his opinion on the issue at a recent joint meeting of the Southeast Regional Subsistence Advisory Council and Alaska's Federal Subsistence Board. He blamed federal law enforcement actions for impeding Alaska Natives' ability to make money from sea otter hunting and artwork. LeCornu noted that his grandfather worked as an otter hunter, and LeCornu hunts them as well.
I'm not an artisan. I couldn't make a coat, and I certainly can't make some of the fancy teddy bears that some of our good artists are able to do. All my sea otter have gone out to potlatch, to gifts, to family, whole pelts. But other people have a right to make a livelihood and not just subsist.
Sea otters are a federally protected species. The Marine Mammal Protection Act only allows Alaska Natives to hunt them. They may take them for subsistence and to share or sell to other Alaska Natives. They may also sell authentic Native articles of handicrafts and clothing made from otter to non-Natives. There are no bag limits or seasons, but kills must not be wasteful and they must be reported to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. According to Special Agent in Charge Stan Przinski, law enforcement has tried to focus its efforts on hunting by non-natives, which is completely illegal, as well as the sale of unaltered pelts to non-natives, which the law also prohibits.
There has been a lot of information about hides being sent overseas, smuggled out of the country, to furriers and other people in other countries who want raw pelts to make their own handicraft, to make their own clothing for resale.
As far as crafts and clothing made from otter, fish and wildlife officials say they are trying to provide additional guidance on what is legal to sell outside the native community. The agency has released a set of draft guidelines for this. The key point, according to spokesperson Bruce Woods, is that the otter hide should be modified enough so a buyer cannot easily return it to its original unaltered condition without damaging it.
You see, the whole point of these is to prevent what would essentially be unaltered sea otter hides getting out of the hands of the native handicrafters and going to someone who is non-native, who can perhaps less expensively duplicate the same kind of handicrafts and eliminate the market that the native handicrafters have for these materials.
U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service regulations specify that items sold to non-natives must be significantly altered from their natural form. But this regulatory language and the new guidelines are problematic for some hunters and artists such as Peter Williams of Sitka. Williams prefers the broader language of the law itself.
The Marine Mammal Protection Act exemption for Alaska Natives already gives a definition of authentic Native handicraft. You know, it's clear, it's well written, it's already written in the law, in the legislation.
He asserts that the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is undermining the intent of the law, which allows Alaska Natives to continue their customary and traditional use of marine mammals.
They're implementing it in a way that's dictating to us what we can and can't make. And the problem with that is once Alaska Natives are being told by an agency outside of our culture what we can and can't do, what like in the regards of what is our culture, what our arts are, what our traditions are, it no longer is our art. It's no longer our traditions. It's somebody else's.
Williams has organized the Sea Otter Handicraft Coalition, a group of individuals and businesses that sew with sea otter. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service originally asked people to comment on the draft guidelines by March 31st, but that's been pushed back. Agency officials now say people are welcome to submit comments up to and including the date when final guidelines come out, which may be sometime this fall. Verena Gill, a wildlife biologist with the service, says they're also working with the Indigenous Peoples Council on Marine Mammals to set up a fall event that will address the issue. In Petersburg, I'm Matt Lichtenstein.
U.S. Senators Mark Begich and Maria Cantwell want the federal government to quickly look into the potential effects of tsunami-generated debris. Democrats Begich of Alaska and Cantwell of Washington State held a press conference on Friday in Seattle. They called for President Barack Obama to release National Science Foundation emergency research funds that would help scientists home in on what needs to be done to prepare for the debris. Begich says Alaska already has a problem with trash piling up on outer coast beaches.
The impacts of debris coming ashore, maybe from tsunami or otherwise, have enormous impact to our fishing industry, our recreational industry, our shipping, commercial industry, you name it, it will have an impact. So ensuring that we have the right resources, the right information, the right science is critical for us to plan and be prepared for whatever level the tsunami debris moves and comes close to our shores.
It's been a year since a devastating earthquake hit Japan, sending up to 100,000 tons of tsunami-generated debris into the Pacific Ocean. Oyster buoys, damaged ships, and other junk have already been found from southeast Alaska's Prince of Wales Island to the Aleutians. Cantwell cited a derelict fishing boat spotted last week near northern British Columbia as an example of what's to come.
This recent vessel appearing off of the coast, I think, gave everybody the understanding that this debris could be moving faster than people realize. So we want the administration to move faster on a concrete plan that helps us have an adequate response to tsunami debris.
The senators voiced their concerns in a letter to Obama. They also criticized a protest or a proposed 25% cut in the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration's funding for shoreline cleanup. Zone weather today, rain, highs around 46, east winds 10 to 20. This is KCAW.